Hello and welcome to A Mindful Emergence on WPVM-FM. My name is Eddie Lesher, and I'll be joined very soon by my co-host Margaret Kirshner and our special guest for this week. We come to you live every Monday evening from 7 to 8 p.m. at 103.7 on your FM radio dial, or you can stream us globally at WPVMFM.org. This program is also rebroadcast Thursday mornings from 9 to 10 a.m. Our focus each week is on various aspects of recovery, discussing topics such as addiction, trauma, wellness, healing, self-care, and personal transformation in all its forms. And our guests take an in-depth and informative look into holistic, evidence-based approaches that can be integrated into daily life. All our programs are underwritten by A Mindful Emergence, a locally owned LLC that's committed to bringing integrated solutions into addiction recovery and trauma relief, utilizing body-centered mindfulness, self-compassion, and therapeutic movement practices. For more information, go to amindfulemergence.com. And good evening, Margaret, and welcome back to the studios with me for program number 62 of A Mindful Emergence. How are you?
I'm doing great. Can't wait for this show.
Yes, and without further ado, gosh, I hate cliches, but I just used one. I want to welcome our special guest this week. We're so excited to have her with us, and that's Dr. Terria Ward. So welcome into WPVM.
Thank you, Eddie and Margaret. It's a pleasure.
Yeah. So our topic this week is Bridging Worlds, Dream Analysis and Depth Psychology. And this is an area that you've spent a good part of your life working on. You hold a PhD in depth psychology. You've studied the world's religions. You currently have a private practice helping clients understand their dreams in life situation. Give us an idea what we might be focused on this week, Terria.
Well, I'll be happy to tell you my background with dreams and how I got so excited about the necessity and importance of listening to your dreams. And then we'll talk about the private work of why it's efficacious to listen to your dreams and learn their language, as well as I'm becoming more and more focused on what it means to listen to the collective dreaming, to other people's dreams, how indigenous people always listen to the dreams of the people in their villages, and that's how they start the day. Many of them still do. They get up in the morning and listen. So I'm getting interested in finding an approach to hearing more of the dreams, and we'll talk about that.
So understanding and working with dream analysis, let's just clear up any misconceptions. This is not some just new age thing that's come on in the last few decades. This goes back millennia.
From the beginning of recorded history, I think people were dreaming before they had language even. It's a way that the forces of the universe communicate with us, and I think from the beginning of time, people have been listening to their dreams. So no, this is not new age. This is ancient. It's only recently that people stopped listening to their dreams, really very recently. All the world's mythologies and scriptures talk about the importance of the dreams and how the people were guided by the dreams.
So why do you suppose this happened, that people stopped listening? How did it happen?
I believe it's with the Industrial Revolution and the Enlightenment, the onset of rational, linear, logical thought, and the overdevelopment possibly of that way of thinking and being in the world, and the loss of more of a poetic sensibility, and the right brain, left brain got kind of split in there, and we have really diminished the importance of what we know through the left brain.
Wow. Well, how did you get interested in this?
Well, I'll tell you, I loved my dreams when I was a child. I was just telling Margaret, I used to have a very vivid dream life as a child, and I'd be sitting in a classroom, and the dreams that I'd had the night before were way more fascinating and interesting to me than anything that was going on in the classroom. I had to really try to train myself.
I think that was true for me, too.
Yeah, right. But literally, the figures and the characters and the stories in my dreams were so interesting. And they seemed to actually interface with the natural world that I, you know, just walking to school, there was an interface there. Mm. So I've always been a little bit of a dreamy person in that sense. But I learned then that nobody talked about their dreams. Mm. Nobody mentioned them. And if I tried to, which I don't actually remember, but I'm sure I must have tried, and it just seemed to drop dead. Nobody talked about them. So it became my own sort of inner private world. And then I went through the 60s and the 70s and got into a lot of mind expansion kinds of activities.
It's a good way to say it. Sounds like you have commonalities.
We should compare notes sometimes.
Well, there's a lot there that I think was really valuable.
Absolutely.
And it kind of opened me back up to the part that I'd tried to squelch by through the system of education, the way it's set up. And then when I was 24 years old, I met a spiritual teacher who was a brilliant dream analyst. She could hear your dreams and tell you just so specifically so many things about yourself and your life and what you're thinking about and how to direct and guide yourself and understand yourself. She was amazing. And she had all of us who studied with her talking to each other about our dreams, and dreams became just part of the common language, and I felt so at home with that. And so I studied with her for almost 20 years. And then sometime in my mid-40s, I went to get my PhD in depth psychology, which Carl Jung and Sigmund Freud are the initiators of that school of psychology and that thought, which has a lot to do with what's in the unconscious, which is accessed through dreams, and how we are way more than we realize, motivated by forces that we don't have access to through our own technologies even. Buckminster Fuller used to say 99.9% of what's going on for you cannot be picked up by our technologies or our own minds. There's something in the vast unconscious that is driving our world as it is, and there's ways that we need to be in touch with that. And indigenous people used to be in touch with that. They knew how to listen to the voices of the more than human world, as well as the human world and the spirit world and the ancestors and the invisible dimensions of our reality that we live in. So dreams, as Freud said, are the royal road to the unconscious. They take us right to what we need to know. And dreams are very practical. They're going to help you figure out your diagnosis if you're suffering with something. They're going to help you figure out a relationship problem or what it is about your work that is working for you or not. The dreams are always trying to help us with the most practical aspects of our life, as well as our own sense of purpose and identity. They're truly vital.
So you started studying with this teacher at the age 24, but by then I presume you'd already done some undergrad work?
Yes, my undergrad work at that point was not related to
nothing at all.
It was library science. It wasn't.
Okay. So, yeah. All right. When did you start working with people on a professional level?
I started working with people on a professional level just as I was completing my PhD. So that would have been about, I worked with people on a professional level as a minister for 20 years in this organization with my spiritual teacher. I was an ordained minister. And so I consistently was talking to people about their dreams and so forth. So that went on from in my 30s, I was doing that. And then after I got my doctorate, I started teaching and in graduate school and undergraduate school. And after that, bought a retreat center out here in Hot Springs, North Carolina, and started a retreat center. That's what Bridging Worlds is. That's the name of my work. My retreat center was Bridging Worlds. And so I began in earnest in 2004 of creating retreats for people to spend an intensive amount of time listening to the mind of nature. It was about reawakening the indigenous mind, as well as listening into their dreams, which all works together. And so I've had a private practice for several years, born out of the retreats that I used to do. So,
well, there may be some people already wondering, you know, wanting to explore this further. Perhaps you could give them your website.
It's tariaward.com. That's TariaWard.com. TariaWard.com.
Okay. And you have some events coming up. You do these kinds of things regularly. Talk about like an example of a retreat or a workshop or something that you would present.
Well, when I had my retreat center, I did regular retreats. Now I am doing retreats when I'm invited to a retreat center to do them more often is how I'm doing them now until I figure out a place where I'd like to start holding them again. That was only 3 years ago that I sold my retreat center. Mm-hmm. But we have a retreat, a woman named Jocelyn Mercado has put together a beautiful retreat called Women with a Vision Mastermind Retreat. And that will be in Hendersonville at the Canuga Retreat Center. And that's May 5th to 8th. And you can find out on my website more information about that. But that will be six women who are specialists in different ways in terms of how to listen more deeply into your intuition and receive the visions for how to create your life newly. And I'll be working with them. I'll be working with Vision Quests as well. So I have that. I'm also going to be doing dream groups in the area. I'm still kind of getting the details of that worked out. I used to have them more often when I had a different space to do them. So, and I do private practice. I'm available in downtown Asheville in the Flatiron Building. I have an office. And right now, most of the work that I do, except for a lot of podcasts and so forth, but the work that I do is in a private practice where people come to me to talk about their dreams and their life situations and how we can see that through the level of the dimension of the self and the soul that the dreams speak from.
Wow. If you just tuned in, you're listening to A Mindful Emergence on 103.7 WPVM-FM and WPVM-FM.org if you're streaming. And this week, the topic is Bridging Worlds, Dream Analysis and Depth Psychology with Dr. Taria Ward. I'm really curious. I'd like to explore some of these indigenous cultures. Now, you mentioned Vision Quest, which is, I presume you're referring to the Native American approach. How does that, for example, fit in with dream analysis, or does it?
Yes, yes, it does. I used to lead vision quests, and the Native Americans had vision quests, but really basically every continent culture in the world has its own version of what they might have other names for it. But a vision quest is a time when you go out into nature in a very deliberate and well-prepared way to and often there's fasting involved, and for the when I lead the vision quests, there's a lot of dream work involved every morning in the days preparing for your time alone in nature. We're working with the dreams of each other, and you go out alone and wait for your vision to come, and you sit overnight, sometimes one night, sometimes several. I've done up to 10-day vision quests myself. I haven't led 10-day vision quests, but I've done them myself.
Wow. Are you fasting that whole time?
No, no. I would fast usually for 24 hours at that time to kick it off and then eat lightly. I'm out in the woods, so I'm eating gorp and maybe whatever fruit that I have or simple foods. But yeah, I don't fast for 10 days.
That would be intense.
That would, and I think some do.
Yeah.
But that hasn't been.
Yeah. Well, is there a connection between dream work and rites of passage? Because rites of passage have been a traditional part of the pretty much every indigenous culture. Is there a connection there at all, in terms of this transition into manhood and womanhood?
Well, I'm not sure, Eddie, about the direct connection there. I would just say dreaming is a way of life for most indigenous cultures. Like the Aborigines in Australia go in and out of the dream time while they're awake. They think that the people in the Western world who only sleep dream when they're asleep have gone mad. They think we're insane because we can't dream when we're awake. They can walk in and out of those dimensions with full consciousness. And so being aware of what's going on in the dream time, which they call it the dream time, which is really, it's sort of like stepping from one room to another. Like they talk about death, but this is alive. You're kind of step into another dimension where we live, breathe, and have our being just as much as we do in this physical consensual reality that we live in.
So it's a non-ordinary state of consciousness. Is that a fair way to describe
yeah,
it?
Yeah, that's a fair way to describe it. Yes, mm-hmm. It is.
I'm curious, too, as you speak about vision quests and these other realms of, you know, stepping in, how are dreams different from insights or visions that we might get when we meditate?
I think probably they're very similar in certain ways, but meditation takes you into, and you could say more about this, Margaret, than myself, you and Eddie, but I think the states of mind that meditation takes you to are maybe not exactly the same as the REM state mm-hmm. where the dreams arrive. So I think they would be similar and sometimes maybe converge, but somewhat different in general. It's different states of awareness.
And I had an interesting experience just yesterday, my first experience with craniosacral work.
Oh, nice.
And I felt as though I was just moving back and forth between a dreamy state and an awake state, and then a dreamy state and an awake state. And it was so interesting how just a gentle touch on the head, the neck, the low back, the ankles, the feet can instill that kind of a state of mind. And it was very wavy and it was very relaxing. It was definitely dreamlike. It wasn't, you know, my conscious thought process.
Well, the dreams are really in the body. So when you're doing some work like craniosacral work, where you get into the subtle bodies, then the dreams are released. It's amazing. It's not something that's ephemeral in the mind. It's an actual ontological state of being where you're in the dreaming. And it's very connected to the body. It's our cells are dreaming. The earth is dreaming. It's all in the dream. And it's a matter of where we put our focus and intention. And I think with beautiful work like craniosacral work and yoga and other types of body and physical work, it releases.
Breath work, I bet, is in that realm.
Absolutely.
Like holotropic breathing.
I've done a lot of work with holotropic breathing, and it's very much like a dream state that you
really
go to.
Yes, it really is. And it is in the body as well.
And it's so in the body.
Okay,
the whole body is involved in that.
Mm-hmm. That's so interesting, because that never occurred to me that when I'm in a dream state that I'm really connected to the body. It would seem the other way, but not so.
No, the body is very much a part of that. And you know, if we could listen to what our cells know, what our DNA knows, then the dream is going to take us to that. But we've kind of, I think a lot of the rational thought just sort of is above the neck. It's not listening to the wisdom that's carried in the body.
In the body. Mm-hmm. Well, that's certainly a big part of the work that we do. I think especially with you, Margaret, with yoga. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
It's so key. Now, you use the term dream time. Mm-hmm. What do you mean when you refer to the dream time?
Well, that's a term that the Aborigines use for that dimension where that they walk in and out of. It's its own, an ontological realm of being.
Where, is it like lucid dreaming at all or different?
Lucid dreaming is an aspect of dreaming.
Okay.
A lucid dream is the kind of dream where you go in and you're aware that you're dreaming, and you can actually work with make decisions in the dream, and work with the dream in unique ways. It's a state that some people really strive for. I know a lot of Buddhists and
especially
others
in the Tibetan tradition.
Yes,
but not the same as dream time. A little different.
I'm not sure. I really just don't know if I know about that. I'm not that much of a student of lucid dreaming. I hear about it. I've heard wonderful things about it. for me, I get a little nervous about going into the dream time and trying to control things. And I'm sure that's not what it is, but there's something about me that just wants to be in the dream and not try to make certain decisions. I like to let the dream sort of happen and inform me.
So how do we tune into dream time when we're in our waking life?
Well, you know, one of the key things is synchronicities. I mean, I think most people are aware of how that works, how there's a dimension of our reality that shows up through a synchronicity. Like maybe you'll have a dream in the morning, and I can remember one where there was a Native American person in my dream, and then the next thing I know, I'm driving out of the thing, and a Native American is on the side of a truck that's like pulls out right in front of me and stops. And then you know, all kinds of things show up in different ways, like little breadcrumbs that are connecting the dots. That is a dimension of how the earth is dreaming. And I think a lot of people start to notice that, especially when they start paying attention to dreams. Synchronicities will show up and show you how to follow those breadcrumbs in your life. And you'll meet someone who tells you the story that is connected to somebody you met yesterday, and it goes on. And also in the waking life, to go into nature and try to, as much as you can, to just drop your thinking for a while and let nature start showing up for you and see how she's dreaming, how the bird comes in, and there's some kind of meaningful connection between that and you and the bush and a plant. I actually was on a vision quest once. I was having a troubling thought about a colleague, and all of a sudden the wind came up and there was a reed in front of me, and it moved the reed in a certain way that made an absolutely perfect profile of my father's face. I was like, I was looking at Dad. This wind was vibrating it, and I thought, whoa. And then it told me what that trouble in the relationship in a colleague was, that it was related to my father issues. And I hadn't even, for some reason, hadn't even thought of it. And I knew that the forces of nature were just like showing up, and I was very awake and I wasn't high.
Disclaimer.
Just telling
you. But you had to be, you had to make a conscious intention to pay attention, to get quiet and look, just look, be open. That's really the key, isn't it?
It really is. If you're just open, there, all of nature has a voice, a language, a spirit, a beingness. It's always communicating with us if we would just listen, if we had not forgotten how to be in that kind of conversation. The great conversation is what Thomas Berry calls it.
Thomas Berry. I'm not familiar with him.
Ooh, Thomas Berry. I just can't recommend him enough. He has written several books, Befriending the Earth, The Dream of the Earth, The Universe Story. He's a eco-theologian. He used to be a Jesuit priest and then just moved into the natural world in a way of defending our relationship to the natural world.
Sounds like my kind of guy.
Yeah, absolutely. And he said that the things that have gone wrong in so many ways in our collective situation are because we dropped the great conversation. We stopped listening to the wind and the river and the rock and the birds and the trees, and realizing that what they have to say is equally as important as what we have to say, and that keeping that balance of conversation is essential to being in the awareness of the dream time.
Tariet, why do we forget our dreams?
You know, I often say to people that it's like building a muscle. Like you go to the gym and you lift a little and then more and then more and then more. I think remembering your dreams takes building that muscle. So it takes a lot of attention. So when you go to sleep, you make an intention to remember your dreams in the morning. And then whatever you get, even if it's just a color or a thought or a image or a person or a place, write it down.
So little snippets count.
Absolutely.
And you really strongly recommend a dream journal, don't you?
I do. I really think it's important to have the dreams in their own sacred space. It's the place where you're collecting their wisdom and information.
Yeah.
I remember once I did the Artist Way program, and of course they have morning pages, and as I recall, you fill up a couple of pages, you just grab a pen and you start writing, And the idea is don't filter anything. Just write, just write, just write. First thing in the morning, I would do it. Would that perhaps, if I was really going with that, help me access memories of dreams? You know, if I'm not going left brain on it?
It might. I guess you never know what's going to show up.
Huh? Try it.
Yeah, you could try it. For me, I try to tune out any of my waking sort of conscious rational thought. When I'm tuning into the dream, I want to go back into the actual dream and try to remember every possible detail. So if I let my thoughts run like you would in the morning pages, I think that might take you away from what you were actually dreaming. But you never know what
never
might show
know.
Up. Yeah.
Well, we're going to take a pause for a piece of music before we continue. You're listening to A Mindful Emergence on 103.7 WPVM FM in Asheville, North Carolina. And Margaret and I are going to return with our guest, Dr. Tarya Ward, in just a few minutes. I picked out a piece of music, which I was happy to hear that you're also a fan of Cream. Mm-hmm. I was looking for something, and what occurred to me is maybe Sleepy Time.
I'm a sleepy time baby, a sleepy time boy, work only maybe, life is a joy.
Yeah.
Yeah, sleepy time, time, all the time. Dream time. That's our topic this week, working with dreams. This is Eddie LaSure, and from 7 to 8 p.m. every Monday on WPVM, Margaret Kirshner and I are joined by guests who share their unique experience and expertise in an effort to support personal and planetary healing and wholeness. In addition to tuning in at 103.7 FM or WPVMFM.org, Mondays from 7 to 8 p.m. and Thursdays from 9 to 10 a.m., all our past programs are archived on our show host page for your convenience. You can easily locate them by selecting this program from the schedule on WPVMFM.org. So you just go to the schedule. It's Mondays at 7 is where we're listed, and then you can just scroll through and find a whole variety of shows. As I mentioned, this is program number 62. All our shows are made possible by A Mindful Emergence, LLC, an Asheville-based company that offers classes, workshops, retreats, and one-on-one support for individuals living in recovery or wanting to experience recovery. Look for them online at amindfulemergence.com as well as on Facebook and LinkedIn. And just a quick shout-out to an upcoming education forum being put on by NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, coming up on March 9th, a Thursday, from 6 to 7 p.m., they're going to have speakers from their In Our Own Voice team, which is it's a two-person team of trained presenters who are living in recovery from mental illness. So that's going to be March 9th. You can go to the NAMI website and get more information on that if you'd like. And also, next week on this program, we're going to be joined by Jennifer Warner and Bobby Mickerson, talking about continuing care and peer support for recovery. So we look forward to that. So returning now to our guest, Dr. Tarya Ward, the topic is Bridging Worlds, Dream Analysis and Depth Psychology. I want to read a quote from you, Tarya, and it goes as follows. Listen to your dreams. Write them down. Remember again their sacred language. Throughout human history, most of our scriptures, myths, and origin stories speak of crucial guidance coming to the people in their dreams. It is a language that has been largely forgotten but can be revived. Individuals and communities used to be guided by them on a daily basis. Tremendous shifts in healing occurs when we begin again to work with our dreams. So the question is, any advice on how to work with our dreams?
Yes, it can be as simple or as complicated as you want. There are beautiful books written about working with your dreams. You can look for that. But I would say just simply to begin by making the intention to remember your dreams, write down the dreams every single day if you can, or at least make some notes on the dream in your dream journal so that you can start to recognize characters and patterns that are showing up. And when you get your dream, it may very easily sound like a bunch of gobbledygook, but once you start unpacking the dream, you start to get the language. It's a little bit like listening to a foreign language. If you're listening to someone speaking in Chinese, you can't understand what they're saying, and sometimes the dream is like that. It just sounds like a completely foreign language. But once you start unpacking the symbols of what happens in the dream, you start to get it, and it's not that hard to get. It's not that hard to learn. So I would say when you write down your dream, first look at the setting. Is it the home that you grew up in? If it is the home that you grew up in, then the dream is probably referring to something that happened during that era of your life, some maybe identification or way that you formed an identity during that time, or possibly if there are other characters involved, events around something there. So this is a dream about you uncovering some awareness that was developed at that time. Usually the setting of the dream will tell you what the dream is trying to to communicate to you about. And often it's an inner, every character in the dream at some level is just a representative of yourself. So, for example, if it's maybe you have a cousin that was in this dream, ask yourself, what does that cousin reflect to you about yourself? Was that cousin really carefree, funny? So it's talking to you about ways of that sort of quality in yourself, whether it's maybe required now to be more carefree, more funny, or if it's somebody who you had maybe some angry events with. If that person represents your anger, then you'd maybe want to look into why the dream wants you to pay attention to that aspect of yourself right now. The dream, as Freud would say, is usually referring to something that was indicated, maybe even just in a memory, if not an event, within the 24 hours or 48 hours of the dream. So something triggered that dream with just 24 or 48 hours before or after the dream. Because the dreams are prescient. They know what's coming down the pike too. So look to see if something has occurred to you about what the dream seems to be referencing. If you look at the weather, if it's stormy, if it's calm, that will be indicating a certain aspect of your own psyche that's being, will have some meaning as well. Every aspect, every color, every form, every event in the dream has some meaning, and you look at it symbolically. So it can be really fun, and if you just do the best you can with it and then just go about your day, often more thoughts will come, and that can be fun. It's like all of a sudden you're washing your hands at work, and something about the water brings in a new insight or a new idea. So make it fun. Don't be too serious about it. It's a playful language, too, and often speaks in puns.
You mentioned color. Does everybody dream in color, or do some dream only in black and white?
Some don't remember colors in their dreams. So I don't think everybody does dream in color.
Is your ability to dream impacted by what you eat before you go to bed? Or, for example, some people say that when they take vitamin B supplements, they dream more. Is that something you're familiar with? Can that be influenced at all?
You know, other people might have different things to say about that. I think what you eat, the vitamins you're taking, whether you have a medication, all those things may promote the dream, but the dream is still the dream. Oh. It's still itself.
I was reading somewhere that basically we only dream what we know and what we see in life. Would you agree with that?
No.
No?
Okay. Not at all.
I found that on a website.
Huh.
So you wait a minute. Are we saying we can't believe everything we see on a website?
Oh.
Here's another one. Can dreams predict the future?
Absolutely.
Yeah?
Yeah. In fact, it's very interesting. I have a friend currently who met me in a dream 5 years before we met in reality, recognized my face, recognized where I lived. He lives in another continent, so he doesn't know anything about where I live, but he saw the place, could describe it. So, that was in the dream time. It was happening, but yes, often people will have prophetic dreams. It happens a lot. But I do want to say, if there's something scary in the dream, don't interpret it literally. It can be really dangerous to interpret a dream literally. So a war may be just an inner war that you're having with yourself, the two parts of yourself. One wants to eat and the other one doesn't. Or it can be very symbolic of what's going on in your inner psychological life. And a death often in a dream means something good has happened. You've ended something. You've completed something.
I've heard it said that dreams are such a requirement for our mental well-being that if we're prevented from dreaming somehow, we can actually go crazy. Is that true?
I've heard that too. I think actually the fact that we don't remember our dreams now is why we've kind of gone crazy as a culture.
Oh, there
honestly,
we go.
I think I mean it's huge. I mean everybody's on heightened doses of antibiotics and all the violence and all the insane ways that we're destroying the planet. I think if we were listening to our dreams,
yeah,
things would be very different.
A lot of people are heavily medicated.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Antidepressants, anti-anxiety.
That's got to interfere with the ability to dream, I would think, wouldn't it?
No, not necessarily. Not at all. Like I'm saying, I think your medications maybe can stimulate or maybe prevent, but the dream is still happening. It's nature. It's just raw nature. You really can't interrupt it unless you want to.
So it's really a question of just being open and willing.
I believe so. Yeah.
Hmm. Okay. I mean, I used to think that, most of the time I don't remember my dreams, honestly. Mm. But I did your workshop, Margaret and I. When was that? Like last, the one you did over?
Sometime over the summer.
Asheville Insight mm-hmm. Meditation. You came in and did a wonderful workshop, and I was all inspired.
Oh, good.
And I got a dream journal, and every morning I was writing down something.
Good.
You know, I wouldn't remember that much a lot of times, but I write something down. And what I noticed was that when I was doing that, I did a pretty good job of remembering something and writing something. And then I got away from it. Uh-huh. And now I hardly remember anything. I get up in the morning and I see the dream journal there and I go, I got nothing.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, that's probably relating to what you said. I think it's like that muscle uh-huh. I've just let get flaccid and flabby and.
Yeah. Mm hmm.
Yeah.
Right. If you talk to friends about your dreams, that starts to stimulate it too. Mm. So then it becomes a part of your discourse in life rather than just being some private thing that
Margaret,
you feel like you have to do.
She used to ask me all the time about my dreams, and finally she realized she was just annoying me.
Oh, dear.
Yes, I would say, let's talk about our dreams.
And what would I say?
You don't want to hear them. They make no sense.
They didn't make any sense to me.
But I could always find me.
I didn't understand what you said earlier, that it's like listening to a foreign language at first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you can start to unpack it. I mean, once you think about it, you can start to imagine why those symbols are showing up in your dream and why certain things come together.
And I think I've heard this from you, or maybe it was from some other wise person, that the dreams are a gift from our soul. And if we don't open that gift, it's like throwing away a gift from the sacred or the divine.
That is in the Talmud, actually. You might be referring to that.
Yes.
It says, every uninterpreted dream is like throwing away an unopened letter from the divine.
Wow. So that's heavy.
That's intense.
Yeah.
Who would want to do that? We're throwing away a lot. Yeah. Right. Why would you?
What about recurring dreams? Do they hold any particular significance?
Yeah, they're recurring because they really want your attention. Often people start coming into me to work with their dreams because they have one that they just can't, it just won't stop. And so there's something there, and it's like a feedback loop. It's like something that is really needs your attention. It needs you to understand what it wants. Mm-hmm. And so it comes back. Dreams are always, the urge of a dream is to heal. They're always trying to heal you, no matter what it is. They're not trying to scare you or admonish you. They're always trying to heal you, help give you the information you need now to heal yourself.
Even a nightmare,
absolutely. The nightmare can be very revealing of some kind of psychological horror, terror that you need to get some peace around or get some help with or talk to somebody about. Mm. Absolutely.
So you feel like unpacking one?
Sure.
I'm going to take a risk and perhaps expose my neuroses. But
okay.
Talking about recurring dreams, and I might have brought this up in the workshop, and excuse me, but you know, a dream that comes up a lot for me is I'll be in a building and I'm having difficulty finding my way out. It's confusing. Go down this hallway, that hallway, this kind of thing. Or I'm out trying to navigate on roads and having difficulty figuring out where to go. Mm-hmm. Now, maybe the point of this should be rather obvious to me, but is there more to it? I mean, a lot of frustration shows up in my dreams. Mm-hmm. It's like having difficulty getting where I want to go, which is interesting because I do feel in my life like I have a clear picture of where I want to go. Mm. I mean, I do feel that way. I'm doing what I want to do. Mm-hmm. So that's why the dream is kind of confusing to me. Comments on that?
Okay. Well, basically, the dream is always telling you what you don't know. So if we think we know what our dream means, you're wrong. That's what James Hillman used to say. Oh. So that's the thing. So that's good. It's telling you something you don't know. So can you describe the building that you're... Is there a...
Well, one time I remember specifically, it was supposed to be my sister's house. Mm. Okay, but it wasn't like my sister's house. Mm. So here I am in my sister's house, and I'm going in, you know, it's okay, this is the way to get out. No, wait a minute, that goes into another room. Mm. And then there's a staircase, and then I try that, and then I'm in another room. And sometimes people are sleeping in the rooms, and I'm just wandering around, and it gets confusing. There always seem to be a lot of rooms. Mm-hmm. In my dreams. Mm-hmm. Buildings like I'm in the Patala or something, you know, that the Dalai Lama was in that had 800 rooms. You know, it's that seems to be a constant theme. A lot of rooms, mm-hmm. which is funny because we live in a small house.
Uh-huh. Well, a few directions we could go with this. Could you tell me a little bit about your sister? I mean, we don't have to go into anything.
We don't have a bad relationship, but it's a bit of a distant relationship. We don't communicate very often. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll see her this fall, and it'll be very nice and very pleasant, but it's very infrequent communication.
Mm-hmm. Well, so the dream that specifically happened in your sister's house would be referencing some confusion you have about what isn't exactly functioning as you might like it to, or some confusion about events maybe that you have had and how they've helped shape you psychologically, and you're a little lost with that. Maybe you're not particularly anxious or troubled by it, but still there's something that your psyche is working on in the night to try to sort some of that out. So then you want to look for the different events and things that you run into there. Now, when you're going down different passages and all the rooms, generally one would say that all those rooms are parts of the self that for now you're not inhabiting. They're just there. And, you know, we all are very dimensional beings. They say we were beamed here from a star, right? I mean, so we've got a lot going on inside of who we actually are. There's a whole cosmic identity that we have. There are, some people believe in past lives. There are all those identities that we aren't accessing our memory of right now. There are all kinds of capabilities that we have but we haven't developed or focused on yet. Not that we need to, but often... the dream is saying your psyche is showing you there's all this dimensionality to your being. And in some ways, if you keep having this as a recurring dream, it may mean that your conscious identity of feeling pretty directed and kind of clear about what you are and what you're doing, there may be more that your psyche is actually pushing you to open up. And sometimes that's not comfortable because... You know, when your life is working, why mess with opening new doors? And so,
well, I'm a curious guy by nature. But any comments you want to make on that, Margaret? Because I'm going to change the subject if there aren't.
From what I know about your relationship with your sister and about, you know, the complexity of you as an individual, she's right on.
Yeah. All right.
Yes.
Well, it's something to reflect on. Maybe do some journaling on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just consider.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Don't take it too hard or serious.
Yeah.
Just think on it.
Okay. What I'd like to shift to now is collective dreaming.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about this a little bit before we went on the air, but there's this, I refer to it as a sort of a collective or pervasive angst. Is it angst or angst?
I've heard it both ways.
I've heard it both ways.
Okay.
I think you can say either.
I'm going with angst.
Okay.
There's this collective angst that many of us are feeling as a result of the political situation.
Uh-huh.
And you mentioned that you're noticing it. And we've talked to other guests who said they feel it. You know, people who are psychotherapists, body workers. I wonder if you could talk about that.
Absolutely. I think a whole new dimension of my work is opening up as a result of this, partly because as a dream analyst, I am listening to people's dreams every day of the week, generally. And so during this last election cycle, so often the dream reports were seemed to be dreams that were personal, yes, but telling the collective story, telling what's actually happening in the larger world, and really revealing the events and the impact of those events on what's going on in terms of relationships and our feelings about it all. They're coming up really vividly in the dreaming. And people have been quite moved and disturbed by how the dreams are presenting themselves. And so, and there's different levels for it. So when I work with somebody who comes in with a dream that looks to me just like exactly like what's could be collectively interpreted as telling us what's happening globally right now, it also has a very personal meaning as well. So you look at it at different levels. Dreams are multivalent. They have so many different levels. So often the personal dreams are also collective dreams, and I've been seeing more and more and more of the collective dreams that are telling the story of what isn't working, what the feelings are about the emotional tenor of it all, and the relationship that people have to what's going down, whether they're feeling oppressed and terrified by it. And I think there's a new story emerging. It feels to me like the old story of who we are as individuals who believe in progress in this country. Some of our old American dream is really at an end now. It's like we've figured out what doesn't work about it, and it's time for us to tell ourselves a new story about what how we want to be in this planet together. And the dreams are starting to show up and tell us things. You know, some of them are terrifying. Some of them are really helpful. I've had people, more than one, tell me that they hear the cry coming out of a forest of a woman being raped, and they feel it's the earth, the Mother Earth is just like screaming. And in one case, she couldn't even tolerate the scream, even in, for the 2 or 3 days after she was awake, because it was so, it was like, it was shaking every cell in her body. So there, you know, there's, there, you tune into the larger beingness of the earth, and there's guidance there for the future. I've just started a dream symposium, which we're going to be doing monthly. And if you're interested, look on my website, tariaward.com, for to the dream symposium page. And we just had our first one last week where we're listening to people's dreams from 4 different continents. We're on this one. We are listening to people's dreams, and the dreams are telling these stories, and we're so connected in the dreaming. It was, opens up these really helpful conversations with the larger story, the bigger perspective of what is going on and how we share it, and how we can contribute to our increasing awareness of how to respond. And feel that sense of unity. It's like everything's so divided now. If we can dream into it together, we can feel that, how we're really actually all one web of beingness, and feel that camaraderie. It's really beautiful. So these dreaming symposiums, there was an overwhelming response from more than, I think there were 120 people on it, and it, overwhelmingly they want to keep doing it so that we can listen to each other's dreams. I think that that's where real guidance for the future is going to come.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It seems as though it's going to take many, many dreamers to dream a new dream and to create a new vision for ourselves going forward. And I think you said that beautifully. So I think it takes a little bit of intention and maybe consciousness and courage to start to pay attention to the dreams.
A lot of people are scared now.
And for good reason.
Rightfully so.
Rightfully so. It could get a lot worse before it gets better.
But to let the fear control us mm-hmm. is not helpful.
No, it isn't. It isn't. So we kind of help each other, hold each other's hands psychologically through to diminish the fear and feel that strength of connection.
Yeah. Well, and it's very encouraging to know that doing dream work can support that healing.
Absolutely. I mean, I think it really promotes the healing in a collective, personal and collective way. Mm-hmm. And for good reason, all the earlier cultures listened to everybody's dreams. And for not good reason, somehow we put all that down and have made a mess of things.
Yeah. Well, in the time that we have remaining, I have one more question about art therapy. Mm. Is there a connection? Do you find that helpful, or do you tie that into your work at all?
I have never done art therapy, but I have a good friend who's an art therapist, and to me, I think the art is dreaming awake. It's mm-hmm. I think your dream life comes onto that canvas. Probably most artists would say so. I think there's a strong connection. I haven't explored it myself personally much, but I think there's absolutely movies are collective dreams. You know, mm-hmm. those kinds of pieces of art are telling all of our story in a
certainly
vital
music.
Way.
Certainly
and music yeah. absolutely. And when you go into an art gallery, you're into the dreaming of the world.
Yeah.
So yes, absolutely.
And obviously, a lot of musicians have created great masterpieces out of their dreams.
Uh huh.
I mean, this is not new. We know this. They've said this.
Einstein got his theory of relativity in a dream.
Wow. And didn't, who was it, the great inventor Edison, he used to take cat naps and that he would come up with inventions when he was in a REM state and he'd have a notebook and write it down?
Yes, yeah.
Tremendous potential.
And one of the former presidents did the same. He would take a cat nap and he would come up with insights and plans.
Wow. Any last-minute comments, anything that we didn't touch on that you really want to stress, Tarya?
Well, I want people to understand that their dreams are pure medicine, and not to worry about them, but also to pay attention. Is it Buddha that says attention energy flows where attention goes? It's like mm-hmm. if you start giving it your attention, energy will flow through those arteries and those channels, and you'll start to understand the value of what's being delivered every night as we sleep.
So don't let the frustration, the confusion hold you back. Just go for it and see what happens.
If you're not confused, you don't know what's going on anyway.
I got to write that down.
Sounds like a Yogi Berra quote.
I know. That's really good. Dr. Tarya Ward, thank you so much for joining us this week.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. Absolutely. 100%. Thank you so much.
So once again, we want to thank our guest, Dr. Tarya Ward, for joining us this week. And by the way, if you enjoy this program, you might want to check out a couple of other shows on WPVM-FM. One is Wild Heart with Laura Elliott on Tuesdays from 5 to 6 p.m., and the other is A Better World with McNair Ezard on Thursdays at 5 o'clock. So thank you very much for joining me on A Mindful Emergence. And make sure you tune in next week when I'll be joined with Jennifer Warner and Bobby Mickerson talking about peer support in recovery.